Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
First this morning, the Environment Minister Eamon Ryan has said the government is going to examine taxing higher polluting SUVs. Speaking at the Oireachtas Climate Committee, he told its members that the economic case for it is strong when you look at the emission an SUV creates over the 15-year lifetime of the vehicle. Now, Minister Ryan said the case becomes even more compelling when you look at the fines Ireland will have to pay for missing climate targets. Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Oisin Coughlan, Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth, and Conor Faulkner, who's CEO of the Royal Irish Automobile Club. You're both welcome to the programme. And Conor Faulkner, to you first, what do you make of what the Minister's had to say?
Well, I think one thing that frustrates me, Claire, is the use of the phrase SUV. It's just not very useful. It's more of a trigger phrase than anything else these days. I mean, what do you mean by an SUV? It relates to a body shape more than anything else. In many cases, these vehicles are all electric, so they're emission-free. They don't produce any air quality problem at point of use. But calling them an SUV is unhelpful. I tell you one thing that is a very fair point, though, and I suspect I would agree with the Minister on this. Car manufacturers in Europe and elsewhere are making cars that are simply too big. They're too large. They're just too big for city streets.
Well, I suppose that's what we're talking about, Conor, isn't it? We're talking about those big old gas guzzlers, the city tractors that you see that people really don't need if they're transporting one child to school or going to do the shopping.
Yeah, and I think, as I say, that's the trigger. And, you know, an out-of-date phrase, Claire, they don't guzzle gas anymore. As I say, in many cases, they're pure electric. So a lot of progress has been made. Look, when we were talking about general car use 10, 15 years ago, it was mostly petrol and then diesel came along. Undoubted air quality problems with it, plus the unsustainable use of fossil fuels, pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. You know, look what has been achieved in cars and car use. Since then, we're selling vehicles that are zero emission at point of use. I mean, that is sensational progress. Would that the same progress had been made under other headings like, you know, agriculture, industry, the other stuff that are big pollutants. So an awful lot of good stuff has happened. And that's, you know, to be encouraged and welcomed. But when you are reductivist enough to talk about SUVs, as I say, it's a trigger phrase. What are we really talking about? Are cars too large? And is that taxable? Can we do something maybe at European level to encourage manufacturers? I think there might be something in that. But as I say, throwing it into the urban landscape in the Dublins and Corks of Ireland and looking for ways to, you know, in a sense, criticise come tax people who are using those cars, it doesn't feel fair to me, and I think it might miss the point. I think there's a point there, but I almost think he devalues the point by the dog whistle use of the phrase SUV.
Okay, so are you saying that if a car is an electric vehicle and it is a big car, that it should not be taxed or it should be taxed?
Oh, well, look, you know, cars are going to be taxed. And we've demonstrated that the, you know, people will respond to that. You can achieve good policy outcomes by the way that you tax. And that's why electric vehicles are being sold in good numbers at the moment, which is genuine progress for everybody. But we will have to have a conversation about how cars are taxed. Again, in the old days, government relied on excise duty and petrol and diesel for a big chunk of government revenue. Now, the more we pivot away from the use of fossil fuels, the more we achieve broader objectives, but government actually erodes its tax base in so doing. So, you know, there's some policy thinking to be done there about how you tax and why you tax, particularly in a landscape where you're no longer going to have fossil fuels to tax.
Okay.
But I think even as we say that, we should recognise that that is brilliant, brilliant progress from where we were.
All right. Well, let's find out what Oisin thinks now, because what the Minister has said is that this will apply, or he's looking at additional taxes for non-electric SUVs. Is he right to do that?
Well, we're going to have to look at the tax system. I mean, as Conor said, because of the shift to electric vehicles, I know the officials in the Department of Finance and Public Expenditure are worried about the fact they're not going to get as much VRT our motor tax from as they were before because of the way that we have incentivized the shift to lower emissions vehicles. So we are going to have to tax motoring and cars differently. And I do think, I mean, whether or not you use the phrase SUV, Conor and I are both agreeing that cars are getting bigger, and for city streets in particular, bigger than they need to be. So I do think we need to look at it. I would say, actually, it isn't only focusing on the emissions vehicles, it's also just size generally. So I would say we move to a combination of taxing by emissions and size. So you don't escape just by not having by having a large electric SUV type vehicle. Because, I mean, Conor is saying SUV is a bit of a triggering phrase, like, and we shouldn't use it. Well, would you please tell that to the advertisers, because they keep pushing bigger and better and size and freedom, and it's not useful. We don't all need SUVs, particularly in the city. Our SUV type are size cars, and they are the largest sales category now when you look at car sales. So yes, we need to change the incentives. Conor's right, incentives work. But it's also just one last thing before you go back to him, is that progress, I'm not so sure about that. I was just checking the figures before we came on. Emissions from transport went up 6% last year. I think that's the second year they've gone up as a post-COVID rebound.
Can I ask you, though, and Nikki in Wexford has texted this very relevant question in. Oh, there's a line gone down. Oisin, is that your line? Oisin, are you still there?
I'm back now.
Okay. There was just a little drop there. I just want to put this to you from Nikki in Wexford. A lot of people have older SUVs for their family because they can't afford newer ones. Where do you think we're going to get the money? Now, also wrapped up in that question is that a lot of people were told the most environmentally friendly car that you can have is the one that you already own. So if somebody has a 10-year-old SUV, for want of a better phrase, what should they do? Oisin's line is gone again. Conor, can I come back to you on that point? We have been told time and again that if you can avoid changing your car at all, then that's what you should do. Now, if this is going to happen, if SUVs, which are running on fossil fuels, are taxed to a greater extent, people will be left in a quandary, won't they?
Yeah, they will. And you have to be fair to people. I mean, in a sense, you make a deal with people. They were incentivized at one stage to buy diesel because that was the right thing to do environmentally with the technology at the time. They responded to the tax incentives. So it's not really fair to say to those people 5 years later, diesel's now the bad guy and we're going to pile extra tax on you. And as you say, if we want to be just about this transition, you've got to be fair to people. And you've got to be clear on what you are taxing as well. I mean, Oisin and I both spoke there while he was on the line about this unwelcome trend, in my view, of cars getting larger. Now, I might consider that an unwelcome trend, but, you know, that's not a legitimate basis to punish somebody for it. You have to be careful about what you're taxing. You can understand that we have a broad climate imperative and all policies are geared in that direction. But as I say, you can't tax the shape of a car because you just don't like it. Or at least if you're planning to do that, you can't call that an environmental measure. And you always have to be wary of, I don't want to call it snobbery, but in many cases, it's just an instinctive belief that anything you can do to give a car user a kicking, has got to be broadly an environmentally sound thing to do. And you know, that's not right. And it can frequently be unfair.
Okay, so Oisin's back on the line now. And Oisin, I have so many people getting in touch telling me why they need a bigger car because they've got three small children and they have to put booster seats in or the full car seat. People in rural Ireland asking how farmers and horse owners are going to transport animals without a suitable vehicle. And what is your response to that and to the people who thought they were doing the right thing by not changing a car that's over 10 years old?
Sure. I mean, I think that it won't be a single blanket one-off change that affects all cars in the same way, but obviously whatever change there is, there'll be some winners and losers as there always in these matters. But for example, there's VRT as well as motor tax, because it could well be about incentivizing what car people buy next as much as it is about changing the tax balance on existing cars. So it was the change in VRT that made a huge difference back when there was a link made with emissions 10 or maybe 13 or 14 years ago now, and that drove that shift to diesel. It was the change in VRT tax rather than motor tax that made that big difference.
So I could see a situation, and I heard what Conor said there, like, I don't think it's going to be taxing the shape of a car or which cars look nicer. It'll be about linking size and emissions. At the moment, it's emissions. And I think it'll be, I think the most likely thing is a shift to emissions and size. Mm-hmm. Now, that may be for not just for VAT, it may be for existing cars too. But like it won't be a massive shift, I wouldn't say. It might happen over time. So I don't think it'll be a massive punitive tax on people who have existing cars, but it will probably encourage us. Like, you can have a larger car that has three space for three or four children in it that isn't as big as an SUV shape. You know, like while it's a spectrum and it isn't just a binary thing in the way that the way that triggers Conor, there is a spectrum, and people do choose chassis and car bases that are SUV type, and you can have the same space in the car in a smaller bodied car that isn't as heavy, okay, and that isn't as polluting.
All right, Conor, we are trying not to trigger you here, so bear with us and be as forgiving as you can. But on the issue of this being a revenue problem for the government,
yeah,
I mean, people who are switching to electric vehicles when they can afford to do so, they're not paying as much road tax. The revenue from that stream is going down, and the government has to find a way to solve this. Isn't that part of the problem?
Yeah, I think that is part of the problem. And I think Oisin made some fair points there, and that, you know, we're gradually transiting. But if you think about it, every time you offer the consumer a tax incentive, the consumer jumps in response. So a tax incentive to switch to diesel, the consumer jumped in response. A tax incentive to switch to electric, the consumer jumped in response. But the more you give away those tax incentives, you run out of road, and government runs out of tax revenue. So there may need to be some sort of broader reimagining about how cars are taxed and how they move. And the technology is there to do that, but that is a much larger conversation. But you could conceive of a world whereby, you know, with the trackers in all cars, you might be charged depending on when you access a city. Are you peak time or off peak? You might have different charges by location, by time of day. And you might have government in the centre doing the bean counting and making sure that it all added up to, you know, a certain chunk, yeah, of revenue that they deem appropriate,
yeah,
to take off.
A listener says, why not tax people on the distance they drive their cars by putting it on the fuel instead of the car? So that means then it doesn't matter whether your car is electric or not. It depends on how far you travel, how many miles you do.
Can I come in on that? I think there's two elements. One is how far, but also and the fuel, but also just like road space. So I agree with Conor. Like, I think sort of charging where and when you're using your car, and also addresses that issue of people in rural Ireland who have at the moment have much less options in terms of their transport, which is why, for example, we're in favour of a congestion charge, say, on the canals in Dublin, because it's a point charge. People feel it very clearly. There are alternatives, and they may be more likely to take it. I'm actually more sceptical now than I was about putting all the tax on fuel, because it doesn't seem to me, and maybe Conor knows more, that the huge increase in fuel prices we saw, particularly last year, made much difference to people's behaviour because they needed to drive. Whereas actually, I think, a bit like the plastic bag tax, a single point charge at a particular moment makes people change, like the VRT or maybe a congestion charge, makes people think harder about their choices than just increased fuel prices every time you go to the pump.
Mm-hmm. Stephen in Wicklow raises the point that electric cars rely on cobalt, and the mining of cobalt is causing death and destruction in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo. And he wants to know what kind of tax will the government put in place for that. And Oisin, it's worth you responding to that one too.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Look, there's no easy path in life in general, probably, in these issues. Every time we choose, particularly when it comes to consumption of raw materials, we are shifting, a bit like shifting the tax burden, we are shifting the mining burden, the human rights burden, the labour standards burden from different parts of the world and relying on different regimes and different supply chains and different companies, not all of whom we can easily trust. But we do know that the bottom line here is we have to reduce our emissions from transport to zero as fast as possible, and we've committed to half by 2030. So, mm-hmm, yes, absolutely, we need to bear those considerations in mind, but it can't be a reason for inaction. We have to find a way to manage it, not a way just to... I mean, it is a reason why we need to move to public transport, like an act of travel. Like, the less we need these big bulky vehicles sitting outside our houses for 90% of the time to get around. It's not a particularly efficient way of moving. There are times we need it, but we need to make our society and our planning and our amenities and our activities more connected by other alternatives. And we know when there is good public transport and good cycle lanes, people are happy to choose them.
Yeah, but you can't use the cycle lane if you are, like this listener, towing a trailer with four cattle. And you're going to punish, Conor, people who are in that situation, who need a powerful, probably fossil-fueled vehicle to do that.
Yeah, and a multi-purpose vehicle, because, you know, most of us don't have, you know, one car for when we're towing the horse box and another car for when we want to go into town. You know, a family makes an investment in one vehicle and they have to use it and use it well. And you know, I think Oisin concedes this too. You do, in the broadest sense, have to be fair to people. And you can be complacent about winners and losers, but one of the things that's tended to happen when we've made these changes, the incentives work, but in a funny way, they favour people who've got the money to avail of them. You know, so when you reduce the cost of low-emission new cars, that's great, but we had a period even in the transition to diesel where drivers of older diesel cars under the old tax system were stuck with paying an awful lot more road tax than the brand new Merc. And it really did feel quite unfair. Now, it did assist in the transition to much lower emission vehicles, and that's a good, good thing. I think Oisin would concede, you know, the private car that the motorist is using these days is an order of magnitude less polluting than it used to be, which is fantastic. But, you know, there is collateral damage. And I think one of your watchwords, your bigger cars mightn't be to your taste, you know, it might be the climate argument, but always bear in mind that there's a lot of real people out there who are physically affected by these choices, and they have to stay front and centre in your mind if you're going to be fair to them.
And we have a text on that point. Many of us went out and bought diesel SUVs because the Greens told us they were cleaner and they were taxed at a lower rate. It's unfair to penalise.
Well, they were at the time. The technology improving so fast.
Yeah,
that was the right choice at the time.
But you see, the dilemma those people have now is, what do they do? Do they hold on to those cars, or are they being told that they should get rid of them? Oisin?
I mean, you hold on to them until you're... I mean, I've said this on radio before. I bought a diesel car at that time, and I can't yet afford to buy an electric. So I am still driving a diesel car as I try to reduce my use of it. And as soon as I can afford to, I will shift to an electric car.
But you're going to be penalised now. Like, if you have a bigger diesel car that you bought because you thought you were doing the right thing, you could be penalised under these plans.
I didn't buy an SUV, and I don't think my car is as heavy as some other cars. It's 10, 15 years ago since that changed.
Well, good for you. Like, you might get away with it. But what about the people who thought they were doing the right thing, and they have these cars and they're over 10 years old, and they were told the best thing to do is to hold on to what you have, and now they're looking down the barrel of higher taxes?
Well, it'll be a slow transition, and it could be that in that case, it makes sense for the government to say this is what's coming. So it's basically both the information from government and the tax signals are about helping us inform our next choices, right? So it may be that the minister's always said it won't be until the next budget, at the earliest. And it could be that it might be a transitionary system where it goes up slowly over time. So basically, it makes the more and more of us, when we come to buy our next car, it'll be very clear that the incentives will be to have a less polluting car and maybe a smaller car, not an SUV. It won't be a single overnight blanket change that will affect everybody, negatively. There will be need to make the transition as smooth as possible. But the bottom line is we have to have less road use, because we're still having congestion as well as pollution. Pollution's still rising even with the individual cars.
We'll have to leave it there. Oisin Coughlan and Conor Faulkland, thank you both. A huge reaction to that on 51551. I'll try to bring you more of those messages throughout the morning. Just some news coming into us. Iran, the delegation from Iran has quit COP28, the climate change conference, over the Israeli presence there. Now, we're going to be talking about COP28 with Alex Thompson from Channel 4 later in the programme, and the resumed hostilities in the Middle East. That's next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.